Okay, let's unpack this. When we think about cooperative video games, we usually picture, bonding and teamwork. But the source we're looking at today, the Steam Guide to Ruining Friendships via Cooperative Gaming, well, it presents a very different picture. It's a forensic analysis of the exact opposite, really. We're deep diving into games that feel like they're explicitly engineered to find the weakest point in any relationship and just exploit it.
Precisely. And we're using these digital stressors as a kind of shortcut, a way to analyze group dynamics under pressure. So our mission isn't just to list off some chaotic games for entertainment. It's to figure out what they reveal about human nature. You know, who steps up to lead, who just cracks under the pressure, and why is perfect friction-free coordination so incredibly difficult when the stakes are high, even digital stakes.
And what makes this guide so useful is its methodology. It's not just a review. They rate games on a stress level up to 10, and they categorize the specific reasons why friendships break down, whether it's a communication collapse or a total delegation meltdown.
Right. We're looking for the mechanics of the breakdown.
Exactly.
And that framework is key. The guide kicks off with games that tap into the most brutal source of conflict. The tyranny of shared physics and the need for perfect sync.
Which brings us straight to the most volatile one on the list, the one the source rates a flat 10 out of 10 for stress, Chained Together. The name is basically a warning label.
It really is. The concept is simple. Up to four players, literally chained together, climbing out of hell. But the game's function, from an analytical view, is to create an environment of just completely inequitable risk.
That's a great way to put it, inequitable risk, because the guide highlights that immediate injustice. You can have three players execute a series of jumps perfectly, but if that one friend slips, their weight just drags everyone, and I mean everyone, back down into the lava. All that progress is just gone instantly.
And that right there, that reveals a specific psychological breaking point. It's resentment. Resentment towards the weakest link. In a normal competitive game, a less skilled player really only hurts their own score. Here, one person's mistake imposes this huge, non-negotiable cost on the entire group.
So the better players suddenly feel like they have to micromanage, right?
Of course,
Yeah.
they start shouting instructions, or even worse, they get all passive aggressive about the incompetence that's costing them 45 minutes of climbing.
It just eliminates any kind of democracy. The guide notes the real danger isn't even the difficulty, it's the power dynamic. One person, accidentally or not, holds all the progress hostage.
And if they decide to troll, to just jump off a ledge on
All
purpose.
that effort just gone in 3 seconds? That total loss of control is what earns it the perfect 10-10.
Yeah, the guide calls this failure the unjust cost of entry. It's a low-cost game, but it creates this incredibly high-resentment environment. So if Chained Together tests the rope, our next one, Pico Park 2, tests the fragility of time itself. It requires, quote, perfect sync.
Yes. The one with the deceptively cute little cubic cats. It looks so simple, and yet it scores a 9 out of 10 on the stress meter. How is a game that looks so adorable almost as stressful as climbing out of hell?
Because the simple graphics are hiding this profound demand for simultaneous action, the levels go beyond just simple coordination. It's not about taking turns. It demands that up to eight people press the jump button at the exact same millisecond.
Exact same millisecond.
Yes. It's asking for a kind of physical temporal sync that humans just aren't really built to achieve consistently.
So we're moving from the frustration of sequential failure, where one person messes up the next step,
Right.
to the paranoia of simultaneous failure,
Right.
where you're not even sure who messed up the same step.
Exactly. And the source really leans into that paranoia. After the group fails the same jump 20 or 30 times, people stop helping and they start accusing. The internal thought becomes, is my friend genuinely this bad at pressing one button, or are they secretly sabotaging me?
And the person with a bit of network lag or a history of bad timing, they become public enemy number one.
Instantly.
That ambiguity is what's so fascinating. It erodes trust so much faster than a clear mistake. The guide says it creates a high risk of awkward silence in Discord.
Which is when you know the real resentment has set in. The shouting has stopped.
Okay, so we've seen physics and timing break people. Where do we go next?
Well, now we pivot. We've explored physical sync, so now the sources move us to the mental battleground. We're talking about how groups manage pressure, delegation, and just massive complexity when the clock is ticking down.
And that sounds a lot like a certain legendary game in this genre. Overcooked, all you can eat, Everything about that game, you know, the cheerful music, the cute little cartoon chefs,
Yeah.
it all hides the pure, unfiltered anxiety that gets it an 8 out of 10 stress rating.
The source is spot on here. It calls it the ultimate pressure cooker simulation. You're not just cooking. You're performing crisis management with very little time and almost no space. You have to process orders, chop ingredients, wash dishes, put out fires, all while your kitchen is, say, split between two moving trucks.
Or inside a volcano.
Or inside a volcano, exactly. The core conflict is the delegation crisis.
When that cognitive load gets too high, the group structure just it implodes.
Yeah. The source material even pulls quotes to show that exact moment of breakdown, the shouting, "Who is washing the plates?"
Why did you burn the tomato, you idiot? I think I've heard that one before.
We've all been there, and this game is like a perfect behavioral profiler. It reveals your true personality under pressure. When that timer is in the red, who steps up and leads? Who crumbles?
And who, as the source so perfectly puts it, just spins in circles while everything burns.
That's the real failure. It's not the recipe, it's the inability to prioritize and delegate under that extreme stress.
Right, the guide says the risk isn't just failing the level, it's losing your voice from screaming. So if Overcooked tests task management, the next game, keep talking and nobody explodes, it tests something even more fundamental.
Verbal clarity.
Verbal clarity.
And this setup is just brilliant. A 9 out of 10 for stress because it introduces asymmetric information as the main source of conflict. You have one player, the diffuser, who can see a ticking bomb but has no idea how to disarm it. Then you have the other players, the experts, who have the manual, this long, dense PDF, but they can't see the bomb.
So success is 100% dependent on how well you can describe things.
Exactly. And the diffuser is dealing with sensory overload wires, buttons, weird symbols, while the experts are frantically trying to find the right page in the manual before time runs out.
It's pure chaos.
The guide gives this perfect scenario of the breakdown. The expert yells, "Cut the third wire!" The diffuser, panicking, asks, "But what color is it?"
And the expert is flipping through pages saying, "Wait, wait, the manual says if it's blue and has a red stripe, do not cut it."
But of course, the diffuser is under so much pressure, the music is blaring, and all they hear is blue and red, and their brain just shorts out.
Boom.
Inevitably.
The game isn't just measuring communication, it's measuring how quickly pressure and noise destroy your ability to use adjectives correctly.
It's the ultimate relationship test, really. Can you calmly describe a patterned wire when the stakes feel explosive? It forces you to simplify complex instructions on the fly.
Okay, so from coordination failures, we're now shifting gears completely.
We are. We're moving to individual actions in a high-action environment, specifically the introduction of friendly fire.
And that's where Helldivers 2 comes in. Now, you might be wondering why this hugely successful action shooter is on a list of friendship ruiners. The answer is very simple. The developers decided that bullets and bombs should hurt your friends just as much as they hurt the enemy.
And this is a test of trust erosion in a chaotic space. It gets a 7 out of 10, but it's often accompanied by this nervous, almost hysterical laughter.
The source details the pure indignity of it all. Picture this. You are in the middle of an epic fight, you're doing everything right, and then a 500-kilogram bomb lands directly on your head.
Called in by your friend?
Called in accidentally by your best friend.
It's the difference between failure being the game's fault, you know, like bad physics,
Right.
and failure being a direct violent result of your friend panicking or just having terrible aim.
Or, and the source notes this one is even more frustrating, you're running for cover and you just get shot through the back by a sentry turret your friend placed. He's
Yeah.
trying to hit an enemy behind you. You die, and your friend is over there celebrating their kill count.
The developer's justification for this is, well, it's quite humorous. They call them acceptable casualties for democracy.
Which sounds great on a macro level.
But the guide correctly contrasts that with the micro-level pain of the player who just died for the 10th time because of a misplaced grenade. This game really tests the limits of your forgiveness.
That's a really comprehensive psychological profile. We've got five distinct ways collaboration can just fall apart. Let's try to synthesize this for everyone listening. We've identified failure points coming from physics, from timing, from verbal clarity, task delegation, and accidental betrayal.
And we can summarize these based on what kind of relationship stress you, the listener, might want to explore. If you're looking to test your group against the pressure of inequitable risk and maybe get some physical comedy out of it, the source points to chain together.
And if your goal is to really challenge strategy and crisis management, to see who crumbles when they're saturated with tasks and the clock is ticking, Overcooked is still the undefeated king of that genre.
But if you're looking for action, for explosions, and you really want to test the robustness of your interpersonal trust when individual errors have high stakes, then Helldivers 2 is the recommendation.
But the guide does issue a very clear final warning, one we have to pass on. The authors take zero responsibility for broken controllers, smashed monitors,
or, more likely these days,
getting blocked by your friends on all social media. You really do play at your own psychological risk.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the entire framework here is built on this paradox. The high-stakes conflict only really works because deep down we believe it's only a game.
Yeah.
That's the essential lie we have to tell ourselves to put up with behavior that would be completely unacceptable in, you know, any real-world team.
And that's the real takeaway, isn't it? These games are so effective because they reveal genuine leadership and failure styles. So before your next game night, maybe consider this question. Given these different failure modes, the unforgiving physics, the communication chaos, or the accidental betrayal of friendly fire, which high-stress scenario do you think would best reveal your personal leadership style when it all goes wrong? Something to mull over as you contemplate your next disastrous purchase.